Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Everybody loves watching March Madness. Everybody has opinions on teams. And Chris, you write a blog about whether people should have been sitting there last night rooting for Nevada or not, wanting to give you guidance. I can't remember a time where a blog here at KTIK.com has drawn as much response as yours to should you root for a rival. And I was surprised that there were as many that said yes.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, you've spelled out the case, though, of why you would support them, right? Because A, the Mountain West benefits when Nevada looks good, and we'll get to how they did look good at times and didn't look good at times, and yesterday's loss to Loyola Chicago. But it's, I kind of wrote it after the show as more of not really what you should or shouldn't do, because I'm not in a position to tell anybody what their feelings are. Like, I'm not here
to dictate your feelings. You were more asking the question, right?
Yeah, I'm out here asking the question because I just gave my background of, you know, I'm somebody who grew up in South Jersey, right outside Philadelphia, where, you know, I had two main professional sports teams that were my favorite teams growing up, the Phillies and the Sixers. And under no circumstances am I ever rooting for the Celtics in the NBA playoffs because I can't stand the Celtics. And I'm not rooting for the Mets ever because I hate the Mets. So there's nothing that could happen to get me to root for those teams. I want their fan bases to be miserable. I want their teams to be miserable. I don't want them to have bragging rights. I don't want them to enjoy any kind of happiness.
But I think the difference between pro and college is, number one, the league does not benefit, whether the Mets or the Yankees or the Giants or the Phillies or whoever wins, doesn't have a financial consideration where it does if your team in your league wins in the NCAA tournament.
You ain't getting any of that money, though.
Recruiting, you know, might be a factor, might make your league look more prestigious. I don't know too many people. I guess I know some people that if push comes to shove, they'll root for either the National League or the American League in baseball. Yeah. I don't know of anybody in the NFL that says I'm an AFC guy or an NFC guy. No. I think it used to be when they were AFL, NFL, but not anymore.
I'm not old enough to consider the NFL, AFL days. Mm-hmm. You're a Giants fan. You're not rooting for the Dodgers ever.
No, like,
there's
absolutely not.
Never a circumstance where the Dodgers could be playing a game of baseball and you're rooting for that team in blue.
Never.
You're not doing
never.
It.
Never.
So, like, that's the thing, and that's kind of how I grew up rooting for sports. And even in college, like, I, you know, in high school, I kind of knew I wanted to go to Syracuse, so, you know, became a Syracuse sports fan. Not to say, like, I grew up a Syracuse sports fan, because that's certainly not the case. But Syracuse's main rival in basketball, Georgetown. The Syracuse-Georgetown rivalry, one of the best rivalries in all of college hoops. Under no circumstances am I rooting for Georgetown. And I don't care about the Big East. Right now they're not in the same conference, so I guess you can kind of throw that out the window. But back in the day, they were absolutely the same conference. And I did not want Georgetown to have any success. I did not want them to have bragging rights over Syracuse. And to add that to, add this to it, my brother, younger brother, the only sibling I have, he's a Georgetown guy. He went to Georgetown, graduated from Georgetown. So there's not a chance that I would want him and his team to have any kind of bragging rights. And the fact that Georgetown is terrible right now and they keep losing to Syracuse when they play annually, yes, I'd rub that in his face. And when Georgetown is a number two seed, lost to a 15 on Florida Gulf Coast in the 2013 NCAA tournament, that was awesome. It just happened to be the same year that Syracuse made it to the Final Four in Atlanta, which was also great. But yeah, it made it more sweet that Georgetown did not have any success when it came to March. But I moved to Boise in 2013, and I'm just getting a different perspective or a different appreciation for how maybe there is ways where you can support your rival or not. And I'm not trying to tell anybody what they should have felt yesterday when Nevada choked away another game in a way that they probably could have won that game or should have won that game against Loyola Chicago. I'd be interested to hear the feelings of some fans who maybe they knew it in a way it could benefit Boise State if the Mountain West gets that financial money or the Mountain West looks like a better basketball conference. But did you feel good or bad when Nevada went down yesterday?
I will give you the Cliff Notes version of what happened at our house. Throughout the entire game, my wife, who's been here since 2014, was rooting against Nevada. Pete Cavender would have been proud. She hated Nevada. She hates them during the season, wanted to see them go down. I am usually more practical, especially on the financial side. So I'm thinking, as I'm watching the game, you know, that could be worth an extra 100 G's to each of the teams in the league over the span of some time. You know, maybe we want to look at it. But I will say that it brought a smile to my heart at the end of the game when Nevada found a way to lose. And found a way to lose when I just think they did not play the last couple minutes of the game well. And as we get into the game, Nevada is very much, as you've seen in this tournament, a roller coaster team. When that roller coaster is coming on the downside, that train is moving very fast. But they also have times when they're trying to chug uphill, and they look very, very bad. But in the end, I had to smile.
So
I had to smile.
When push came to shove, you didn't want to root for your, you didn't root for your rival. And when it all came down,
correct,
to rivalry,
correct,
means you do not like them. So if they're enjoying success, that eats at you. You mm-hmm. don't like it. And it might not be reasonable. Again, the conference benefit, you're not getting any of that money,
no,
are you? Like, maybe you are. I don't know. Maybe,
I'm not.
Maybe you do get more money. And maybe that would change your perspective on this if you got some of the additional money that Boise State got, because Nevada went a little bit farther in the big dance. But yeah, it's not one of those where I like have an opinion of, oh, you should think this, because, again, yeah, I can't tell you what you feel. But now that Nevada went down and they lost, when they were in the process of losing, I wonder. I think a lot of people's emotions would probably be on the way you were. Well, I kind of liked Nevada when they were going, but seeing them lose might have been even better.
Or maybe you're just trying to put a good spin on something, right?
Yeah.
You're going to lose the money, so at least they lost.
True.
But I looked at that game, and they started extremely hot, forced Loyola into an early timeout, and then they couldn't hit the broadside of the barn in the last 7 minutes of the first half, allowed Loyola to get a big lead at halftime. And then I thought the biggest thing of the game for Nevada was they didn't play defense. Loyola had, what, 11, 12, 13 shots in a row that they made to start the second half?
Yeah.
Now, a lot of them were twos, and Nevada was scoring as well, but they didn't get going and get back into the game until they got stops. And when they got stops, they were like that locomotive that was chugging out of the tunnel at warp speed.
If you watched that game and you hadn't watched any Nevada all year, you're wondering, like, what are the strengths and weaknesses of this team? Because it seems like from 1 8-minute stretch to the next, they look like a different team, and it's really strange. And I think it's almost a product of their head coach. Like, if Eric Musselman, he's an erratic coach, right? Is that too harsh to say he's an erratic personality? Kind of seems like he's out there, all over the place. He can be really emotional, and he can lose control sometimes, and sometimes he's more stoic than other times.
I don't know if erratic is the right word. It seems like he's emotional.
Yeah.
His feelings, you can really see his feelings, and I think sometimes his feelings, I think teams take the personality of their coach.
And that's where I was going to go. Like, I described it as erratic. You can say emotional, but erratic coach equals erratic team. And they play like he acts, like, all over the place. Like, sometimes he looks like he's in control. Sometimes he's not. Sometimes he's on a big run. Sometimes he's not. And that's what Nevada, they play like. And maybe to their defense is what usually fuels them and being able to get the stops by switching. And it seemed like throughout the tournament when they turned up the defense to, all right, we're not going to let you score, they, you know, found a way to make that big run at the end of the game. But they did that too. They had a 12-2 run at the end of the game when they were down 10. It looked like all the other games that Nevada has played so far in the tournament. Double-digit deficit, second half, 12-2 run. They get it to a tie point of game. Now, yesterday, picked Nevada. I should have had the guts to pick Loyola Chicago because I made the points for Loyola Chicago to win the game. I ended up chickening out like a clown and ended up picking Nevada. I don't know why. As you know, Boise State, if you're on the fence about it, you don't have to pick Nevada. But yeah, I made the case for Loyola Chicago, and the game played out like that because the Ramblers, throughout their tournament run, they have had more minutes where they've looked like the superior team against better competition, at least seed-wise, than Nevada has. Nevada's had to, you know, they've been behind. They only led for like 4 minutes the entire tournament coming into the game. And you had the typical Loyola-Chicago not executing down the stretch of the games and making it come down to the last few possessions. And I think there is room to criticize Eric Musselman for how he handled those last couple of possessions. And I know you were really hard about that on social media.
I don't think he coached. I think he was standing there as a cheerleader on the sideline. I don't think he understood the foul situation. I don't think he understood what they – and he didn't – maybe he understood there at the end, but certainly didn't communicate to his team. And maybe as I'm comparing it to football, it's analogous to a quarterback gives a play fake with the third and 10 late in the game, and you know he's going to throw anyway, and it just freezes the linebacker for just a second, enough time for you to throw the ball to the tight end that Matt now has to step on the linebacker. But for people who weren't watching, there were 36 seconds left. Loyola was up one, so there was a six-second differential. You played it out and stopped him. You were going to get the ball back with roughly 6 seconds left to try to win the game or tie the game. They opt not to foul, and in order to foul, they would have had to foul a couple times to get to the bonus. But the thing that you cannot do, there's one thing you cannot do, is give up a three. Mm-hmm. And their help defense reacted to somebody in the middle. You should have let him go for the two. You let the guy open for the three, and much like the Boise State-Utah State game, when Merrill hit the three to take a one-point lead to four,
that's the one thing you can't allow.
That's the one thing you can't allow. And they did a lousy job of that. They did a lousy job of understanding the foul rule at the end. You basically put all your eggs in one basket. I believe that when you're down at the end of the game, you got to figure out a way to make the game go as long as possible. And he didn't do that. He basically said, we're going to get a stop, and we're going to come back with 6 seconds left, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, I'm not as passionate about the lack of a foul when there's a six-second difference between shot clock and game clock in a one-point game as other people are. And some people are like, you absolutely hard-set rule have to extend that game. And you know, I'm still more on the side of, all right, try to get a stop. I don't know more on this side, but get a stop, get the ball. You got 6 seconds. What in a 1 point game? We've seen plenty of times where 6 seconds is enough for you to get the ball up the court and get a look.
Okay, what side of the ball has? I think Nevada's an offensive team, my opinion.
And teams aren't defensively.
And
too.
Teams aren't making free throws now. Maybe Loyola was doing a decent job of it. I just think that, you know, if let's say they miss the shot and they get a rebound, you might be looking at less than 6 seconds left to come back.
Yeah, you could maybe, there's other ways you can go with a trapping defense, which I think is probably the best situation there, is where you don't foul, but you double team the ball and make them either have to take a quicker shot than with 0 seconds, or at risk they can get possibly a turnover if they elect not to shoot. So I think there are other ways to go about that situation instead of the automatic foul. But I think what it does highlight, and it's something that I've complain about both in the women's game, because I think this comes up more in the women's game, that teams aren't at the foul limit because there's five per quarter instead of seven per half. Very rarely in a college basketball men's game does a team only have five fouls in the last couple of minutes.
They didn't even have five. Yeah. They had four.
So like that's really strange. It doesn't happen very often. In women's game, it happens more, but it should be a rule that's implemented in both games, and it's a rule the NBA has. Second foul in the last 2 minutes should be bonus. It could be automatic 1-1, like advance it to the seventh foul, the rule set you have there. But there should be no circumstance where your lack of fouls throughout the first 15 right. to 18 minutes of a half is a negative for you at the end of the game. You have to have the second foul in the last 2 minutes is the bonus. That's what the NBA has. It works fine. That way you're not like constantly trying to foul
really
four times in a
really
row
you're
to get them to the line.
Really, you're being penalized.
Yeah.
For having played a good game to that point.
Exactly. It's
by
silly.
Not fouling. Yeah. So, way more to go on last night's games. Way more to go on the games tonight, which you can hear right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. But first, you can win $1,000 without having to call Tony to play a parlay. Play 4K a day with four chances for you to win $1,000 every weekday starting Thursday. That'll be right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. Where else did we go right? Where else did we go wrong last night? As we continue our discussion, critiquing the coaches, critiquing the players from the NCAA tournament, next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. March Madness will start again at 5 o'clock today over on AM 1350, joined in progress at 6, right here on Sports Radio, The Ticket. And this tournament, in the time I can remember, Chris, is the maddest March Madness, where we've got some wild seeds that have made it through to the Elite Eight. I mean, you look at the South. The 9 seed against the 11, I don't know that I have ever seen that before.
You have not, because it's never happened before.
And you've got the 9 on the West seed taking on the 3. Has that happened before?
I don't know the facts on that one.
Now tonight, you're going to see a lot more chalk. Very few upsets. A 5 has slipped through in the East bracket, and they'll play a 1-5-2-3. And in the West bracket, you got your 1-4, 11, and 2. But to me, Syracuse is a blue blood. And when you watch that game on TV, they just don't, even though they haven't played that well, they just don't, to me, look like an 11.
Nah, they look like an 11. Have you seen them play?
I said, when you see the name and you see the
well,
team.
When you see them play, it looks like how in the world do they even win a game? Their offense is just rough. But the other team plays at their level thanks to the zone.
Yesterday we made some picks, and I picked against Gonzaga, and I felt very strongly about that pick. Now, I did not know that Tilly was hurt. I didn't know Tilly was hurt last week, and that's why they said he played poorly. But I'll tell you why I picked against Gonzaga. I watched him in person, and I go with a lot of what I kind of feel. I was very unimpressed with them leaving Taco Bell Arena against Ohio State. I thought it was the worst Ohio State team that I had seen in the tournament. I know they had a bad year the year before when they didn't make it. And they won not that easily in basically a home game. And I thought Florida State would be the kind of team that they just don't see in the WCC. And I thought they'd have trouble with their length, with their athleticism, and their depth. And they did.
Yeah, but they're also missing one of their best players, Tilly. Like, that's – if you told me you're going to be without one of your – they have, like, three or four guys who average between, 14 and 12 mm-hmm. points per game, and he's one of them. And if he's not there, and he's also the length in their interior defense mm-hmm. – well, yeah, that's a big deal. You going to tell me that one of the centerpieces of your defense, not to mention one of the pillars on your offense, is not in the lineup? That matters. I would have liked to see this game with Gonzaga at full strength. They're not good enough to miss one of their best players and mm-hmm. compete against a bunch of power conference teams. That's just not what they mm-hmm. are. They need what their formula was to get to this point to be able to keep marching on in the tournament. So I don't know what to think of that. Like, you're going to try to make some grand case that this shows that Gonzaga needs some stiff competition throughout their conference, because this shows that once they get to face the big boys that they don't know how to handle themselves.
I just thought that they didn't look ready to play that athleticism. And I think you'd see teams that look more like Florida State in the Mountain West. You'd see UNLV. You'd see San Diego State. You wouldn't see any of those in the WCC.
But they've been fine in the tournament. The last 4 years, as I mentioned, they've maximized their seeding. And this year they did maximize their seeding, although they got upset by a 9 seed in their bracket. Like, I don't think they're hurting. I don't think you can blame this on anything like a grand picture of the state of the program. They don't face good enough teams in their league, and that's what hurt them. Again, last year's squad made it all the way to the championship game. Years before, they've gotten to the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. Like, they're fine. They're fine. Like, this is just a bad game because they didn't have one of their best players, and Norvell wasn't hitting shots the way he usually does either. Like, or he has leading up to it. He was shooting like 50% from three over a 6-7 game stretch. And
but maybe he played tougher teams longer. Yeah,
this was a coming back to earth type percentage game. You're mm-hmm. just not going to shoot that way throughout a 10 game sample size. This is not how it works with shooting percentage, just like batting average. Mm-hmm. You're not going to hit 400 throughout the entire season. You might hit 400 over a short stretch, but you don't expect that to stay. So I don't think it's a big picture thing. I just, it's a shame. Like, I would have liked to see the Zags at full strength and to be able to get a good read for him. Mark Few kind of seemed like, it was just a disappointing situation that he got injured at practice running into a guy, or it aggravated an injury that was already there. What I'm shocked is, how did it not get out? Mm-hmm. I know college athletics, they can keep a lot of things close to the vest and everything like that, but how does – I feel like if with any other team in college basketball, an injury to a top guy like that, like we find out. Like Purdue, mm-hmm. Haas got injured, and he might be able to play today.
But it was injured during a game.
Yeah, but we still figured out the severity of it. Like the fact that, oh, it's a fractured elbow. This is a pretty big deal. We had no nothing, but Dana Jacobson on Twitter like tweets it out 5 minutes before the game, and that's significant.
But I will say, going to another game last night, Gonzaga was not able to overcome Tilly's loss, or at least you can maybe paint it that way. Kansas State played token minutes for Wade, their top player, didn't play at all in the second half, and they beat a Kentucky team that, on sheer talent, got a lot more talent than Kansas State. Kansas State, I thought, did a tremendous job. They kept subbing. They kept bringing people in. They handle things well at the end. An undersized team against Kentucky, they get two offensive rebounds on the key play where Brown takes it to the basket. They just took it from Kentucky.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't the final score was a 3-point game. And I know Kansas State never really had like a huge lead, but they always had, if you the steal the college football phrase, the game control.
Mm-hmm.
That they always were in front, arms distance lead, couple of possessions lead, and you knew kind of Kentucky had it in them to at least rally back. But Kentucky's wasn't great. They had a good stretch in the SEC tournament, but even here in Boise, when you guys had a chance to see them up close, it's not like they were dominant in their games against Buffalo or in their first game against Davidson. They were fortunate to be able to win those games. And the Atlanta aspect of it, I think, was played up a little bit, you know, a little bit too much. That they're going to have a bunch of crowd. The crowd ain't out here making buckets.
No.
And Kentucky's had some losses at home this year when they actually were playing in front of their home crowd, where it makes you scratch your head. They weren't a consistent basketball team. Like, for example, Nevada has been a better basketball team than Kentucky 90% of this season.
Agree.
So if you thought that it was a surprise that Nevada was here and would be, if they was two matched up, Kentucky would have been a heavy favorite. That would have been a little bit puzzling considering the fact that Nevada was a better basketball team for pretty much the entire season than Kentucky, except the SEC tournament that just skewed our perception because they cut down the nets. And whenever a team cuts down the nets and has the reputation of Kentucky, we think they're back.
And winning against West Virginia helped their seeding in that Big 12 SEC challenge.
Yeah, it was early, though.
No, that was in February.
Oh, yeah, that was in February. Yeah, that was...
I think that was huge to getting him a 5 seed.
Yeah, and West Virginia has also been a little bit up and down.
Nobody's consistent in college basketball anyway.
But I think there's a big takeaway here with Kentucky and the fact that this didn't look like Anthony Davis or Carl Anthony Towns or some of the other number one type draft picks that have been there on Kentucky over the last few years. Coach K has really done something to Calipari. Like, Coach K is taking all of these blue chippers that Kentucky was getting as recently as 5 years ago. The number one, the number two, and the number three prospect for next year are all committed to Duke. Duke has gotten Marvin Bagley this year. They've gotten guys like Justice Winslow, Jahlil Okafor. Like they're now getting the top three guys in recruiting classes that used to almost be automatic Kentucky commits. And it's like from the same areas of the country, too. I think what Coach K has done is really struck in a dagger to Kentucky basketball. They are not getting the same caliber of recruit from the top end that they did as recently as 5 years ago, and it's showing with the results.
Right, and you looked at the last few minutes of the game. I thought Kentucky looked like they were playing a lot of freshmen, where when they've had their big runs to the tournament, the year they went undefeated, they played a lot of freshmen.
But they're better freshmen.
They were better freshmen, absolutely. Absolutely. And then the one game we didn't touch on, has any team ever had a bigger high and a bigger low than Texas A&M and beating North Carolina and then losing to Michigan? I mean, that team played the part of the boot in one game and the rear end in the other.
Was that the same team? I saw them against North Carolina. They look like they might be able to beat Memphis in the NBA, like the Memphis Grizzlies, not the Memphis Tigers in college basketball. And then all of a sudden they just – was that just a game that you had to throw away because Michigan was unconscious from deep? Like they were hitting everything. Mm-hmm. Like, contested, non-contested, it didn't matter. They were just – and maybe that was due because Michigan did not shoot well in the first two games.
Mm-hmm.
So they were due for a breakout. But like, what are you going to do?
I have a feeling tonight – that Clemson is going to play the part of Texas A&M. Clemson looked like world beaters against Auburn. I think tonight they're going to come out and do absolutely nothing against Kansas. That's a little foreshadowing of one of my picks tonight.
Just be careful with Bill Self in this week. The second week of the tournament is just not usually the week of the tournament for Bill Self.
Coming up next in the update, what beef does Kansas State have with Kentucky following their win in the Sweet 16? Fish will have details in the update next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Ticket Sports Update sponsored by Wendy's. Wendy's serves fresh hamburgers on fresh beef on every hamburger every day. Download the Wendy's app for offers you can't find anywhere else. Well, the South region of the NCAA tournament continues to be pure chaos, as for the first time ever in the Elite Eight, we'll have a 9 seed playing an 11 seed as Loyola Chicago and Kansas State both advance. Kansas State took down Kentucky 61-58 in their game last night, though Kansas State a little upset about how the game ended. Several players from Kansas State took issue with the fact that no one from Kentucky participated in the post-game handshake. This is what Coach Calipari had to say about the reason he did not participate in the post-game handshake with Kansas State.
Well, I went down to shake their hands too, and they were turned and celebrating so that I walked off. What had no disrespect for anything. Just that they were celebrating and I was happy for them to, you know, I walked off too. But I went down, I shook all the coaches' hands. I went down to shake their hands and they were, you know, which I understood. They're in the Elite Eight game now. Chance to go to the Final Four. So that was no, my team's not like that. Neither is our program. There's no disrespect in any way. They beat us. They deserve to win the game.
No, he's right. Like, yeah. If you just saw the pictures, like they lined up to do the handshake line, except there was no Kansas State players there because they're all up, running up and down and jumping because they won a game in the Sweet 16, which good for them. They should be happy that they reached the Sweet 16. And same with Kentucky. They shouldn't have to wait around until they're done jumping up and down to go off the floor. Nah, they got to get back into the locker room. There's a cooling off period that needs to begin.
Now, let me ask you guys, did somebody just ask the question? Or did somebody from Kansas State actually complain?
I think a lot of the players were complaining after the game.
I'm sorry. You're out there celebrating. Game's over. If they're ready to line up, you got a choice. You can either celebrate and jump up and down and hug your teammates or high-five your student section or your band, or you can shake hands with Kentucky. Kentucky does not need to wait around. And yeah. I don't mean Kentucky. Whoever the loser is doesn't need to wait around.
Exactly. And I, Coach Calipari gets a lot of heat for just whenever he opens his mouth, it's similar to Saban. People just disagree with what he says. I thought he was awesome after the game. Both on the I heard it on the radio, listening to Sports Radio The Ticket yesterday, and I also saw some of the interviews he did with whatever, CBS or Turner or whatever one had the game. He was really good saying that I made mistakes down the stretch. I was so proud of our team and how we fought throughout the year. Like, it wasn't, you would hear Coach Calipari usually think, selfish, he's going to blame his players. No. That's not who he is. He's actually really good at talking and coming across as not Brian Kelly-like. You know, like Brian Kelly's out here. He never makes a mistake.
I think the line forms behind Brian Kelly as to who will throw you under the bus. The best.
Yes. He absolutely never takes the blame. It's always his players' fault. Now, Calipari's the opposite.
The one thing about Calipari, and I think it's one of those things that the game plays out and you either do something or you don't do something. And we talked about how they had a lot of freshmen. And I thought maybe they should have called the timeout in the possession that they took the quick three when they were down one. And I think he thought about it because immediately after the game, he was talking about how if he had to do it over again, he would have called that timeout. He had one timeout left, and I think a lot of times when you're on offense, if you call a timeout, you let the defense have a chance to set up. Mm-hmm. You have to get the ball back in, and if you don't have another timeout, sometimes that could be a problem with a five-second call. And you could just see him racking his brain and thinking, would it have been different if I had used my timeout there instead of saving it?
Now, whether he took the timeout, he took a timeout on the down
the next
by three possession,
and they had a chance to get a shot off.
I didn't think that was the smartest thing either because it allowed Kansas State to consider the foul. Mm-hmm. And I'm always on team. If you're on defense and you're up by three, the other team is within the last 7 seconds, you got to foul them and not let them get the 3-point shot off. Chris Weber was making the opposite case that K-State was so small. That it's actually dangerous for them to foul and leave it to a rebound because Kentucky's oversized. They might be able to get the rebound, but I still think you got to play the percentages. They got a decent look, enough of a look that could go in on a 3-pointer, and it just didn't happen to fall in an isolation pull-up. I'm still, if I'm K-State, I'm fouling in that situation, and Coach Calipari using the timeout gave the Wildcats of K-State a chance to discuss it.
But don't you think, though, that he called the timeout based on what happened 10 seconds earlier?
Correct.
Well, the Sweet 16 will continue today, and it could feature a player that was once ruled out for the tournament. That's because the NCAA announced today that they have reinterpreted their rule on players wearing braces, and that reinterpretation has allowed Purdue center Isaac Haas to play in the Boilermakers' remaining games if he wants to. However, their coach, Matt Painter, said he remains skeptical if Haas' elbow is even healed enough to allow him to play.
So did they make them make a new brace? I got to believe it's not the same brace they showed him to get approved the first time.
No, this is Purdue an engineering school.
Yeah, they are,
so
big time.
That's what they said. Purdue's an engineering school, so they're, of course, they're going to work on a brace that works. If you fracture your elbow on your shooting arm, you can't shoot. Like, maybe as a post player, you could use your opposite hand or whatever, affect shots. But when push comes to shove, they can foul you, and if you have to go to the free throw line, you can't shoot free throws. So I don't know how this is going to work.
Yeah, shoot him out your hand.
I guess it all depends on what percent he is, but I don't know that I could go with somebody that's 50% or something. I mean, mean, it sounds like he's not going to. I don't think he's going to play tonight. Do you?
I don't think so. And I know just from reading a couple of things, it's not like I have any insight on Purdue. I haven't watched them enough to have this opinion. But there are some people who think that they are better off stylistically when Haas doesn't play. Like, as good as he is, they are a good team when they, quote-unquote, go small and have a lineup of more guards on the floor. Because the backup's also, like, 7'1" and 7'2".
Right. And so it's funny, he plays with a sleeve on his arm. Yeah. And I was watching the game the other day, and, you know, we were watching on a small TV in the kitchen making breakfast. And Teresa says, I think Haas is playing. And I go, I'd be surprised. And I'm looking at this thing. And that guy's last name is Harms. I could tell the last name started with an H, and it looks short, but I'm going, that doesn't look like the guy that got hurt.
Yeah. So, I mean, the point of it is, the way they played before, they always had one or the other on the court, and maybe it benefits them to have minutes where they have neither of them on the court, kind of go small, be able to speed it up a little bit. So, I don't know. That's something to pay attention to.
Well, Bob, your favorite day is 6 days away.
Yep.
And there's been a lot of debate, not for your Giants, but for the Yankees, on where they want to bat Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton in the order. And it appears they might have a completely different idea than everyone had expected. Today in the Yankee spring training game, Aaron Judge hit leadoff, and Aaron Boone said before the game that the team will consider having Judge hit leadoff against left-handed pitchers.
Oh, I thought you were going to play a
No, I didn't know.
That's why I waited. I expected to hear Aaron Boone's game.
I think Bob was stunned silence by this consideration.
Especially in the American League where the pitchers don't bat, trying to get a guy an extra at bat is not a bad idea. I think what you'll see is you'll see the Yankees juggle that lineup a lot early in the season. And we'll see, you know, if they stay healthy, whether they get into the groove of, you know, one player batting in a certain spot in the order. But orders have a way of changing. Judge just struck out, by the way, in the bottom of the eighth right now as we have the Red Sox-Yankees game on. Yankees being shut out 4-0 by Boston. And is Stanton up next? Is he batting behind him? Is this Stanton or not?
Yes.
So they're batting Judge 1 and Stanton 2?
At least today.
Yeah. Well, that's, to me, completely to say we want to try to get that extra at-bat every game for both of them.
Is getting them the extra at-bat worth, like, you know, the traditional one is you want speed and on-base. You want speed at number one, on-base percentage number two, and then, you know, slugging percentage guys 3 and 4.
But once, without the pitcher in the lineup in the American League, once the game starts, every inning starts differently. It's not like you get to start one every time. So
I think
it's sort of overrated as far as the idea of, well, you need to have a one, a two, a three. Who knows where one is going to be? One may never lead off the rest of the game.
So if you can get it over the course of a season, how many extra at-bats is that typically? I mean, between every day one-hitter and an every day four-hitter? Because traditionally, one of them would bat third, one of them would bat fourth.
I'll bet you it's probably going to be worth an extra, what do you think, 35, 40 at-bats a season? I don't know. That's just a guess.
That's significant.
And then just a quick reminder before we end the sports update, the second half of Sweet 16 will be on Sports Radio Ticket tonight. That starts at 5 o'clock over on 1350 with Kansas and Clemson. Those games will then be joined in progress right here on 93.1 FM after Caves and Prater wrap up at 6 p.m.
Again, you can win $1,000 without having to call Tony to play a parlay. Play 4K a day with four chances to win $1,000 every weekday starting Thursday. That's on Sports Radio The Ticket. Coming up next, we've got Quick Hits. Chris has the story of a strange NBA story that got even stranger. And I'm going to talk about what West Coast teams have a beef at with the NFL. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
All right, Chris, what strange NBA story just got stranger?
Kawhi Leonard. The fact that he's only played in a handful of games this year with a quad injury that was before the year really suffered last season, and the Spurs have cleared him. And Kawhi's like, I'm not ready to play. And he sought his second opinion in New York, and there's really been no clear indication of what that second opinion was, but the facts remain that the Spurs are just waiting for him to play, and Kawhi is just not playing. And ESPN reported yesterday that the team had basically a meeting to, hey, what's up, Kawhi? Are you going to come back or not? Led by a couple of the players on the Spurs to kind of see, all right, what's the deal here? And then today a quote came out from Tony Parker to Basketball Talk, the NBC website for basketball, And Tony Parker said, my quad injury was 100 times worse than Kawhi's Leonard's, and I found a way to get back.
Do you think he's going to play again this season?
I don't think so.
I don't either.
Like, he hasn't played yet. There's a lack of trust. Now, like, Manu Ginobili said earlier this week that I don't think he's coming back, or at least we have to prepare as if he's not coming back. Tony Parker having this quote come out, it just seems like the players aren't on the same page with him, so there's a lack of trust there between players, and there's certainly a lack of trust between Kawhi, the doctors, and the higher-ups with the team, because he doesn't think that they've handled his injury correct, and the team doesn't think Kawhi is doing what he needs to do to get back on the court. So this is all adding up for, like, next year they're going to have to decide whether they want to offer him one of those big-time max contracts. You probably have to offer it if you're the Spurs because, you know, you don't get a guy like Kawhi every day. If you're Kawhi, do you accept it or do you almost force your hand at a trade?
Or is he wanting them to basically let him go, do you think? You think he's trying to push that?
Yeah, or let him be a free agent or in the trade route. So there's a lot. I don't know how this is going to end, but if you would have anticipated this at the beginning of the year, which superstar would have a drama surrounding him where they're not on the same page with their team? You would never think it'd be Kawhi and the Spurs.
But also, not only the Spurs management and coaches and doctors, but it seems like the team is on the same side against the one player.
Topic number two.
Who should be the most disappointed to see Loyola and Kansas State in the Elite Eight?
Not Kentucky, not Virginia, not Cincinnati, not Tennessee, not Arizona. All good candidates as those teams all got beat in that South Regional. But it's Illinois. Team in the Big Ten that went 14-18 overall, 4-14 in the conference. They are the big money team in that state. They see a small private school from the biggest city in the state with the most talent dancing along in the NCAA tournament in March Madness. So you should be mad that this little school that has nowhere near the budget you are is zooming their way possibly to the Final Four. But how about this? They will be playing in the Elite Eight against a coach you fired. That was two coaches ago. When Bruce Weber was the coach at Illinois, they went to the NCAA tournament 6 times in 9 years. They basically fired him because they didn't think he advanced far enough. And they're on their second coach. The last 6 years, they've been to the NCAA tournament 1 time. Illinois should be embarrassed to see Loyola and Kansas State in the Elite Eight.
It is really shocking, the drop-off, though, that Illinois has had in that way, where I remember, was that 2005, the team that made it deep with a bunch of guards? Mm-hmm. That I thought that team was so fun to watch. I was like D. Brown, one of their main guys, mm-hmm. On that squad. Gerald Green didn't go to college. I kind of forget that roster. I'm going to pull that up maybe by the end of this segment so I can just marvel at it. But, yeah, they're playing undersized back then when they were making that run. They're playing undersized now, Kansas State, and making that run.
And Illinois is doing nothing right now.
Topic number three.
What continues to be the most puzzling thing you're seeing in NFL mock drafts?
The number two pick right now belongs to the Giants. The most puzzling thing that I'm seeing is people projecting the Giants to not take a quarterback. Maybe they have some intel that says that they won't take a quarterback, but like, how often does a team like the Giants get into the top five of the draft with a glaring need at quarterback because Eli Manning's not going to play for that many more years after this? Why would they not take the quarterback? You're very rarely going to have this chance to be in the top five where there are quarterbacks to be had there. I feel like you have to take a quarterback, and if you don't take a quarterback, you trade the pick because somebody else will. But there's no way that they should stay at two and take something that's not a quarterback.
Now, middle of the season, when they benched Eli Manning, to me, it would have been that the organization is saying, you know what, we want to see what we have, we're going to move on. Not only did Eli Manning end up being the starting quarterback later in the season, I think the very next week, but it ended up being probably the thing that blew up in the coach's face. McAdoo was out. So to me, it seems like the Giants aren't all on the same page with one another. I agree with you. I think Eli Manning is not going to be your answer when you finally get a team good enough to contend again.
Topic number four.
Speaking of the NFL, what beef do West Coast teams, what do they have and what do they want to do about it?
Well, the West Coast teams don't like playing 1 o'clock local time games in the East. So they want to have a rule, and it's being pushed by the 49ers, Chargers, and Cardinals. Teams last year that went 5-10 in those early games. They want to say no more than three games can start before 1 p.m. your local time, which would mean a lot of 4 o'clock Eastern time games when those teams go east. The Rams at 4-1 last year in those early games are not part of this proposal push. Seattle, a lot of people here, Seattle Seahawks fans, are outscored 75-0 in the first half of 1 o'clock Eastern time playoff games. They're not part of the push right now either. They might vote for it. And this is something that I thought was kind of weird. They were trying to justify it with, since 2002, Pacific and Mountain Time teams have been outscored in the first half of 1 p.m. playoff games in the Eastern time zone 202-56. Well, they should be outscored. You're on the road. You're the worst team.
Fair. That's, you're not going to have the advantage when you're the worst team against the other team in their building.
What would football do with a 64-team tournament? That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Three of the most exciting weeks in the sports calendar, actually three of the most exciting long weekends, Thursday through Sunday, are the college basketball tournament. Bob Beeler, Chris Lewis here, fish across the glass. And Chris, you know, other sports, I think, have really tried to copy it. Baseball, softball, where you have your mini regionals, and then you feed to the super regionals, and then you get to the College World Series. But those things seem to be a little more drawn out. There are more games. Football now has finally gotten us to a tournament with four games. But wouldn't it be fun to see football do a little more of this?
Right, have a bracket, own a month. Now, college football would argue, hey, we own months, as in our season is our bracket, if you will. But there's some truth in it, not 100% truth in it. And I don't know how there's no way you could have a 64-team bracket, right? That seems silly, because you'd have to, how long would that take? At least a month and a half to play.
It would take six weeks, wouldn't it? Yeah. If you stuck to the one game per week. So it'd be kind of impractical. But Fish, who looks for topics for us and comes up with things to talk about, you found something where group at CBS is at least hypothetically saying we could do a 64-team tournament.
Yeah, like you said, a lot of people try to imitate. So Ben Kerchevel wrote an article on CBSSports.com, and basically what they did is they created a 64-team college football tournament using last year's team. So you would have Baker Mayfield at Oklahoma, et cetera. So no, we'd still have Montel Cozart going to this tournament. They seeded them based off the CBS Sports college football rankings, so they didn't use the AP. And unfortunately for Boise State fans, our season didn't last very long. They had Boise State as a 6 seed playing the first game against the 11 seed Purdue Boilermakers, who went 7-6 last year. Kerchevel had the Boilermakers upsetting Boise State, saying, "If there's one thing I don't want to see as an opposing coach, it's Jeff Brohm with time to drop a scheme for the Boilermakers. It's not pretty outside of a couple fun trick plays by both offenses, but Purdue's defense rises to the occasion for the upset win."
Somebody that's writing the story, I think, is friends with Jeff Brohm's agent.
Oh. Come on. They're getting some money off the top?
Come on. Purdue would not beat Boise State. Purdue was lucky to beat an Arizona team that was in all kinds of disarray. Boise State looked good in their bowl game against Oregon. They would have destroyed Purdue.
I'm just laughing at the logic here. Like, I understand, like, it's too easy to just pick off favorites. But then again, like, if you have power rankings of this team being better than this team, unless you give me like a specific angle or matchup reason why this team just matches up well, like, shouldn't you trust your rankings and say that the favorites would win, especially in hypotheticals? Now, I guess that's like the fun of the tournament bracket too. You have to pick some upsets along the way. But the logic of another team outside of Boise State being good with a long time to prepare for a game, like, that's what made me laugh about this. Like, well, if anything, Boise State has shown that if you give the Broncos enough time to prepare for a game, they kind of have a reputation of being able to make good use of that time of prep heading into a bowl game.
Now, Fish, the parameters of this thing in the 64-team tournament, they seeded it based on how they had them in their computer polls or whatever. Yep. CBS had. Now, they also, most of the times I've seen an 8 or a 16-team field being used for college football, the first round or two I've seen on home campuses. True or not true for this exercise?
That was, from what I could tell, they didn't explicitly state it, but from what I got reading other synopsis of games, these were all neutral site games based on where your bracket was played. They said they brought in Jerry Palm to kind of set up a bracket. So Boise State was playing in the Omaha bracket, so a little closer to Purdue than Boise, but they would have been playing a neutral site game in some sort of imaginary Omaha stadium.
Okay. My gut feeling on a 64-team football, assuming we're going to suspend parameters, we're going to play this thing for 6 weeks. Assuming everything's a neutral site, I think if you played it on home sites, the seeds would carry. Mm-hmm. Carry a very high percentage of the time. If the 16 seed was a team that didn't make a bowl game in Georgia Tech going to Alabama, I don't think they're going to win the game, but they're certainly not going to win the game if it's in Tuscaloosa. I also think that the seeded teams, if you did this thing over a 10-year period, would get picked off far less than seeded teams in basketball. Because I believe in football, lines make a big difference, and lines are way more consistent than, say, basketball's two biggest variables, which are shooting, which has a way of coming and going, and foul trouble, where an official can basically take one of your best players out of the game. Unless somebody gets hurt, the only person that's going to stop somebody playing would be the head coach.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little concerned about the seedings of this, as I'm just like looking through who are some of the 16 seeds and like who are not some of the 16 seeds. I'm guessing they stuck to bracketing principles, right? Of you have to have a representative of each conference, right? You have to have
sure
a group of five winner, like you know they're champions in this. I'm judging by the team.
Troy
that are
is in there,
yeah, but Troy's like a 9 seed. Like they got a pretty good break on this seeding.
Army is in there, although they didn't play in a conference.
North Texas got a 15 seed. Houston got a 16 seed. Like those kind of things make me scratch my head.
UAB coming back from football for football after dropping it for a year or two, they had a 14 seed.
Yeah, so that would be my one concern. Like, how in the world are you seeding this thing? Who's a part of the selection committee? But I'm going to look at Boise State's path. Like, how far do we think the Broncos could get? All right, let's say, whatever reason, this is the bracket that got come up with for last year. And now we're filling out a NCAA tournament football bracket. Boise State is a 6 seed against Purdue, the 11. We both said that Boise State would win. We're not going to agree with the CBS.
No, we're not.
Now, the 3-14 that would feed to the Boise State game is TCU and UAB.
TCU would win that game over UAB. And I think TCU would be a toss-up game for Boise State. I think TCU was pretty good last year, wasn't one of Gary Patterson's better teams. So I think you could get by TCU in that game.
All right, so let's play it ahead. On the bottom side of this bracket was Clemson against Texas Tech is the 2-15.
You don't even need to ask the question.
I think you've picked Clemson. Wake Forest in Texas was the 7-10.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Clemson's beaten either one of those
teams.
I don't think based on what they had. I love Boise State, and there are many years where they've beaten somebody like Clemson. I don't think last year's team would have beaten Clemson. I think you would have gotten to the Sweet 16 game. You'd lose to Clemson in the Sweet 16 would be my – if this draw were here and you look at what you think you have, what you think they have, last year's team I think would lose to Clemson in the Sweet 16.
So overall, you think, and you kind of explained this, you would think a basketball bracket of 64 teams would yield more upsets of a single elimination format than a football bracket of 64
Absolutely.
Teams.
Absolutely. Because I think that the strengths and skills of what you can do in the lines on both sides of the ball, I think, are less variable than shooting and fouls and things like that. I'm not saying on a 64-team tournament that you're going to wind up with the same Final Four that you do, you know, through the season where you had Georgia, Oklahoma, Clemson, and Alabama. But I think your Final Four has a greater chance of being those top seeds, again, assuming everything's played at a neutral site, than it would be for basketball.
Like, what is it, once since 2000, all 4-1 seeds have made it to the Final Four in basketball?
Mm-hmm.
You would think in football there'd be more than once. Mm-hmm. There are all 4 teams that make it to the Final Four. I don't know. I think it would be more variance than you'd think, because in a college football season, especially throughout conference play, and the month of November has been a big thing of this, there's madness.
Yeah.
Like, you don't trademark it as November Madness in the same way that the NCAA has trademarked March Madness for college basketball. But like, how many times on a Monday do we come in here and say, I can't believe this result. How did this team beat this team? We didn't think this would happen going in. So to think that that wouldn't happen in a single elimination format, there would be some of that.
There would be some upsets, but I don't think there'd be as many as there would be in basketball. Fish, agree, disagree?
No, I think you're completely right. I think there would be, you'd almost, this would be sort of like filling out a women's college basketball bracket. You pick the higher seed, you're going to be in the 80th percentile. And to answer your question, Chris, they just took their top 64 teams. They don't care about conference affiliation. Because in their rankings, Houston is number 61, North Texas is 60. So they just took their top 64 and just transplanted into a bracket.
But is there somebody from every league that's gotten in there or not?
I would think so, because then what, there's only 10 leagues?
Yeah, there's 10
leagues. So you don't have to deal with, you know, the Mid-Eastern Southern Atlantic Beach Conference like we have to do in college basketball.
That's
so I, yeah, but no, Bert, they just took their top 64, Chris, transplanted it over.
Yeah, I mean, I maybe think there'd be a little bit more madness than you guys think because, yeah, in our month of November in college football yields its own, and maybe that's because, again, you're in conference play, and but when you're in the same conference, there's a general level of competency between the teams. Like, you know, even though, like, Vanderbilt doesn't have the same football resources as Alabama, maybe there is a more comparable level of talent than, let's say, Georgia against Arkansas State.
I was going to say, when you looked at the SEC this year, a lot of the losses were losses that basically took you out of the top four, because that's all the people cared about.
Mm-hmm.
What, Auburn beat both Alabama and Georgia. And then they lost to Georgia. I'm trying to think of the Big Ten. Did anybody come up with an upset? But it doesn't. It's usually not some team that's won two games.
Well, Iowa beat Ohio State or something like that.
Yeah, but Iowa was fair. I mean, they were like six wins. They went to a bowl game.
Yeah.
So I don't know that you'll see, although the teams that would be in the bottom of the draw, the 16s, would be teams that probably had at least a 500 record.
See, that's the thing. I would think there would be a better chance in this for a 16 to be the one. Than in the college basketball.
Yes, I would agree with that. I would agree with that just because.
Because there's what you're going for is 16 seeds in college basketball. You're taking teams from conferences like the the SWAC, MEAC, and sorry to pick on the historically black conferences.
No, but now what if you put the one? Those teams are basically 1AA's.
Yeah.
When they have football, they're primarily 1AA's or FCS now.
Mm-hmm.
If you included the FCS champions and you got that, I think you would be finding the
correct.
Similar, you know, the winner of the MEAC or the winner of the SWAC or the Big Sky or something like that is probably not going to have nearly the chance against Alabama that even they had Georgia Tech, which was, what, about a 500 team in the ACC. What did you say they were? 5-7? They had a losing record?
Yeah, they finished 5-7 because they had their one – or 5-6 because they had their UCF game canceled.
That's true. So they were right about 500. I think you're right, Chris. I think you might lose one more, but I still think in the end, a number one seed in football would probably have a better chance of making it than basketball.
Yeah, the great part about this discussion, we're all right because we can't be proven wrong because this doesn't exist.
Now, could I have done this thing and exercise and have Georgia still play Alabama in the championship but make that last play and get a sack or an interception and win the championship?
You could play it all out. Let's have Georgia and Notre Dame. They played each other last year, right?
They did. So, Georgia won by 1 point.
Exactly. So they haven't, from my understanding, Fish, they haven't played this whole thing out yet,
They're currently at the Sweet 16. They'll do the Sweet 16 of the Elite Eight. And I think they're sort of mirroring the NCAA tournament. They're just sort of a week behind. So Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games will come out next week on CBSSports.com.
So who's left?
You got Alabama, Oklahoma State as a matchup in the Atlanta region.
Okay, I have no problem going with Bama.
They have Florida State as a 14 seed, making it all the way to the Sweet 16 and facing Ohio State.
And in this consideration, do they say that the coach Jimbo Fisher stays? And is this going to be a stay for him?
No, this is last season.
But he left before the bowl game. If he left before the bowl game, there's no way they're doing this. Right?
I mean, that's fair, I would suppose. But he has a 14 seed. They're out here playing Ohio State.
They'll lose that.
All right, Georgia, Notre Dame. I don't know how you could pick, like, Notre Dame in this. Like, they already played this year, or last year. Georgia won. Like, how are you going to make the case that Notre Dame would beat Georgia?
And I do think, not just to try to stroke my alma mater, but I think Georgia got better as the year went along. I think Notre Dame did not get better as the year went along.
Penn State, Virginia Tech, Oklahoma, Washington, TCU, Clemson. Those are the teams that are left.
No, you forgot one more. There's UCF, Stanford, and then USC, Wisconsin.
USC, they're going to probably make win this thing. I just have a feeling. I'm going to predict my winner is USC. I'm going to predict my winner of what they're going to pick. I think they're going to say USC
catches
fire.
If you take Bob's idea of that you'd always go chalk, there's two teams that shouldn't be there if you assume the Elite Eight would be 1, 2, 3, 4,
okay.
Which would be Virginia Tech, who's a 6. They had them beating number 3 Auburn,
okay.
And then the curious case of the 14-seeded Florida State Seminoles.
Yeah, right. Oh, well, it's a writer's imagination. As Chris said, everybody can be right and everybody can be wrong in this thing. When we come back, we'll get back to the real tournament. What do we expect to see tonight as the other half of the Final Four, of the Elite Eight will be decided, and then the Final Four will be decided on Saturday and Sunday. Keep it tuned right here to Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. NCAA tournament back in action tonight. And tonight, if you look at the brackets, I highlighted in pink every time I had a loss, Chris. Uh-oh. And I highlighted in blue every time I had a win.
What do you have against the color pink?
I just picked it. They're odd. You know, sometimes green and blue kind of look similar.
I understand blue.
This is the
like
real one.
Blue is Boise State, so of course blue is going to be a correct pick.
But I got a lot of blue marks on the right side of the bracket that's sitting on my desk and a lot of pink marks on the left because I don't have anything left on the left side. I don't know that I had anything left heading into last night. But this is kind of what you expected. Villanova, West Virginia, Texas Tech, Purdue. That's your East region from Boston. Kansas, Clemson, Syracuse, and Duke. That's your Midwest region from Omaha, Nebraska. Now, Kentucky last night had the home court advantage at Atlanta. And it was interesting when you watched the first game involving Nevada and Loyola. It looked like there were a lot of empty seats. One thing about Kentucky fans, they don't go to anybody else's game but their own.
Yeah.
And they'll leave. I would think that the home court advantage tonight, if there is one team that's going to have a big home court advantage, it's going to be Kansas in Omaha tonight. I think of all the eight teams that are there, they are going to be the one team that you're going to notice when something happens, that they'll be the team that the crowd is going to respond to.
Yeah, but is it really an advantage? Is it really? Because with Kansas, the thing about them is they get a little tight sometimes. In this, at least that's been their reputation, and maybe narratives are overplayed a bit, but there's something to be said for every year Kansas is either a one or a two seed, and was it like only once in that span within the last 8-9 years they've gotten to the Final Four, and that usually means it's a loss either this round or the next round. Mm-hmm. Something happens and they've had the geographic advantage quite a bit. Like, they usually put Kansas in that Midwest area. So is it really an advantage? I would tend to think probably not. And I don't know as much about Clemson. It's not like Clemson was a team in the ACC that gets a lot of the attention. Conferences, Syracuse, Duke, and North Carolina, and all that. But has many teams been as dominant in the tournament so far as Clemson?
A&M.
They might have a cold game like A&M did when they faced Michigan in the Sweet 16 round. Well, I'm not just willing to advance Kansas. Maybe I've just learned my lesson. I'm like got some kind of scars from having my bracket torn up
by Kansas,
by Kansas in the past, and just this year by everybody. And why should I ever think that a favorite has a significantly better chance than the underdog to win a game? So that's an edge of the seat one because Kansas has burned me.
Sounds like a guy speaking with a grudge.
Yeah, if I picked Kansas before to make the Final Four in years where they've lost in a Sweet 16, and years they lost in a round of 32 before. So, yeah, I've been burned by Kansas before. But, should they win? Yes. Should Duke win? Absolutely. And if Kansas and Duke face each other in the Elite Eight, that's great. Which is why I go on to say that I think today is almost the make-or-break day of the NCAA tournament moving forward. Because you either have a chance to still have some of these attractive matchups still on the board moving forward, and we have matchups to look forward to, and Final Fours that could be titanic, or we could just see the complete elimination of everything we thought we knew about this season and have to survive with a Final Four of a bunch of football schools or the awkward middle child, as I said, the not Cinderella stories, but not really the big-time favorites either. So I'm saying, like, if Texas Tech were to win today, West Virginia and Villanova is almost like a regardless. Like, Villanova is certainly better, but West Virginia has some, like, Javon Carter's really good. Mm-hmm. Like, he's one of the better players. Huggins is a well-known coach. So I don't think you're really losing a lot if West Virginia does advance. But if Clemson and Syracuse win, so you have Clemson, Syracuse. I'm telling you, the Syracuse team is not fun to watch. Like, they might be name brand, and they might bring a certain like element of fans to it because Syracuse does have a loud alumni base. But they are an ugly basketball team. You do not want to see them in the Elite Eight if you're a college basketball casual fan. So if Clemson and Syracuse, Texas Tech and West Virginia are your four teams left on that right side, and on the left side, the four teams left being Kansas State, Loyola, Chicago, Florida State, and Michigan, I don't know any fun story left other than Loyola Chicago possibly winning the championship, and even that, like, do you really want to see Loyola Chicago win a championship?
But I'm also not sure that I wouldn't put Purdue in the middle step trial, and you could replace Purdue with Texas Tech.
Yeah.
So if we're looking at each pod, best storyline, Loyola's got to be the better storyline than Kansas State, correct?
Yeah.
At this stage. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless you wanted somebody else, but of the two that are left, Loyola's the better storyline. Florida State or Michigan, who's the better storyline?
I feel like Michigan with Beilein is at least a guy who's been around, who's been to a Final Four before. I don't know. That Wagner guy. Y'all see this dude out here wild? He's like all big. He's out here shooting long balls, going to the rim and talking smack in the process. Mm-hmm. So he might be fun. I think he's a better story, but is he the same thing as like a Marvin Bagley? No.
No, but you're not getting... You're either getting Michigan or Florida State.
That's what I'm saying. Over Florida State, yeah. But generally, no. But
best storyline, Villanova, West Virginia, Texas Tech, or Purdue?
I would say Villanova. They could go 2 out of 3. You're talking about maybe one of the better runs in college basketball. Like they are probably the, in terms of winning percentage, they might be the winningest team in college basketball over the last few years. So I'd say Villanova.
And then Kansas, Clemson, Syracuse, and Duke. My opinion, with one and done, I think Duke's got to be the best storyline out of that group.
Yeah, it has a chance to make the tournament, because if Kansas and Duke both win, you're guaranteed one of those teams in the Final Four. You're guaranteed something really, you know, like, okay. You got blue blood.
And then you're also guaranteed, if, let's say, Villanova's the other one, you're looking at three teams there that are big-time blue blood program.
Correct. And then we're going to have the debate about reseeding the Final Four is what would happen if Villanova and Duke were playing each other in the right side of the bracket in the Final Four. And the other side is potentially Florida State and Kansas State.
Yeah.
We'd absolutely, like, the debate would get loud the reseeding.
Are you in favor or against reseeding the Final Four?
I'm in favor. I would do it. I don't think that ruins the bracket in the same way reseeding before the Sweet 16.
Agreed.
Does. I think you could do it, and it would make a lot of sense and not have your championship in the Final Four.
But then you would have to, even though they have sixes, you'd have to like give a 3A, B, C, and D as to which three is the highest three, which four is the highest. You'd have to...
Don't they have the list that comes out?
I think they do, but you have to have that, because if 2-3s got into it and one of them was going to have to play, and I mean, it's very possible 2-3s, they play each other as the two middle-ranked teams, but it's possible that you might have to break that tie to determine who would play which one in the tournament. But yeah, I think I'd be in favor of it, because I think many years that I've watched, I've thought one of the Final Four games was really the championship game.
Mm-hmm. But we would also ruin, like, wasn't the NC State run, what was the other side of the bracket that year?
It was Georgia, and it was everybody was red in Louisville. So Georgia was not a real high seed that year, but I think you would have gotten Houston, NC
was it
State.
Houston, Louisville?
Louisville would have been the two. Four. Georgia would have been seeded higher than NC State. So you would have had a complete flip that year as far as the champions go. I think I'm guessing... Out of memory, I don't think you would have gotten Georgetown Villanova in the final either. I think they would have played each other in the Final Four round. Mm-hmm. So there are some of the greatest championship games and storylines that would not have happened. So maybe as many years as you'd help yourself, you would hurt yourself.
Fair, but it's funny. Your tie-breaking procedures could come into play this year if it happened with 9 seeds. You're talking about 3 seeds. 9 seeds. You got 2 9-seeds in the Final Four.
Win $1,000 without having to call Tony to play a parlay. Play a 4K a day with 4 chances to win $1,000 every weekday. It starts on Thursday. It's right here on Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next in the update, am I worried about the Giants' 2018 season before it ever begins? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Ticket Sports Update, sponsored by Wendy's. Wendy's serves fresh beef on every hamburger every day. Download the Wendy's app for offers you can't find anywhere else. All right, Bob, you finally convinced me. 6 days away from opening day, and we will start the sports update with some baseball and your San Francisco Giants. So, of course, we have to put a negative spin on it, get you a little panicked. Doesn't involve a dirt bike this time, but the San Francisco Giants will be missing a pitcher. When opening day rolls around, they announce that former Boise Hawk Jeff Samardzija likely to start the season on the DL with a pectoral strain. Your thoughts, Bob Beeler?
Actually, I was kind of happy to see that there was some sort of an injury, because he's been hideous in spring training. He has had a 10-plus ERA, giving up a ton of home runs, and I'm thinking he's not going to be good. So the fact that he's trying to battle through the injury, and maybe if he rests, and then they said there was real no structural damage, so it looks like they're not going to have to do any surgery or anything, maybe he will be better. But I was concerned really more before they said that he had some shoulder injuries, because I just thought he was being terrible.
What's he trying to do through the pectoral injury? What's he doing?
I hope I think he's rehabbing.
You said he was doing what?
Play through it? Battle through it.
There's battling in San Francisco, just not in Boise.
Oh, okay. He was a former Boise Hawk, though.
He was former Notre Dame wide receiver as well. But he's been solid. I don't expect any more than maybe a number of 3 or 4 starter out of Samardzija.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about Kansas State and Kentucky at the end of the game. The Kentucky players didn't shake hands with Kansas State because, at least according to John Calipari, they were too busy celebrating. But maybe they learned from the earlier game that day in that same arena, Loyola Chicago, Nevada. Loyola Chicago won. And after the game, Clayton Custer was hugging. You know, he's pulling a Jim Valvano, hugging everyone he could see, and that included the sideline reporter Lisa Byington. And then this happened in their post-game interview.
What does it mean for this program, for this team, for you to now have a chance to play for the Final Four?
I mean, I really, like, this is unbelievable. I mean, to be in this situation, I'm so thankful to be in this scenario right now. It feels like a dream, and I'm just trying to keep it going as long as possible.
Thank you for the time. Go hug someone who means something, okay? You're good.
Well, then he went on and hugged a couple players, one of the teams that was warming up. He was just in such great spirits after winning the game. He was hugging everybody in sight, like as you guys said, like Jim Valvano.
Yeah, he was hype. And can you blame him for being hype? I guess that's no excuse for necessarily going around hugging people who maybe don't want to be hugged, right? Like,
Looked like they were the two guys from the other team.
Yeah, but you can't judge it after the fact. Like, you can't be like, oh, didn't look like that. That's how you get into trouble at the workplace and stuff like that. You've got to know that you just can't go around hugging people and then asking for forgiveness later.
There's nothing wrong with a casual hug, Chris. At least for the side, it was a side hug.
Make sure that the other person knows the hug is coming and wants to be hugged.
If you're talking to someone going to the Elite Eight, you should just assume they're going to hug everyone in sight, especially as an 11th.
I'm telling you, I'm just giving you advice. Do not just think that because you're excited, you can just go around hugging people at the office.
I don't want to see any hugs out of you if Syracuse wins the national championship. Zero.
Unless it looks like you want it.
No, I'm not going to. I'm going to make sure you know I don't want one. I'll be like, congrats on the championship. I'll fake you, but I didn't look like I wanted one, Chris. I'm going to get you on that one. Well, Tony Romo's PGA debut, will not see him wearing any Sunday red. Former NFL quarterback, currently 14 over par, 9 over par today. He's on the 13th hole. He is losing to every other golfer by 5 strokes.
You know, the thing about sports, and I'll put in music and artists who sing, the really good people make it look easy, don't they? Smooth. You watch the golfers and the backswing looks so great. It comes through. Romo's not a professional golfer.
Mm-mm.
And he's doing pretty well hanging in there with those guys. But I think you have to realize how good the people are at the top of their game, whatever it is. And I'm including like playing an instrument, singing, anything that requires skill to do. The people who perform it make it look so easy.
That's kind of my argument with Ohtani and like him being able to both hit and pitch. Like, you think you can do both at a high level when you have all the other professional athletes who dedicate all their time to being really good at just one? You think you're talented enough to somehow be able, with the same resource of time, to be able to be exceptional at both of those skills? Like, I think that's a little difficult. But I think Tony Romo, isn't this all setting up for him to be also the one of the lead commentators for golf on CBS? Like, this is what it's all coming down to, right?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
this is probably.
You know, he's right now doing football, and he's really gotten mostly rave reviews, besides Jeff Caves doesn't like him. So I know Sports Talk after us, maybe not the biggest Romo fans, but a lot of people do seem to like him. So eventually he's going to be not only the lead football guy, but he's going to be, like, in here doing Masters coverage, too.
Speaking of Tony Romo, Anybody think he made the wrong move leaving playing for what he's doing? Sure looks like he's made the right move to me.
He's out here golfing. He's talking to Jim Nance every day. But how long before Tony Romo becomes one of the announcers on the Final Four? Replaces like Grant Hill.
I mean, well, hey. I think he'll have to appear in the Big Three first.
Okay.
For a season, and then he'll replace Grant Hill, yeah. He's got to have experience in all three sports, Chris, before he can just take over.
Jim Nance, Tony Romo, Bill Raftery trio calling the Final Four. Now, Terrell Owens said Tony Romo could ball. And that was one of the things that T.O. said back in the day. So
I think he's probably a pretty good athlete. I mean, he's good at football and he's good at golf.
Well, Chris, we've got Bob's thoughts on baseball and spring training. Now let's get Chris's thoughts on the biggest issue in the NBA. That'd be tanking. Because last night we saw something we hadn't seen in the last 20 years. That would be the Charlotte Hornets beating the Memphis Grizzlies by 61 points. Your thoughts, Chris Lewis?
Kemba Walker was on fire.
Right, no, I'm talking about the 61-point beatdown at the end of the regular in a regular season game, Chris.
All right, Kemba Walker was that good yesterday.
The Browns don't even lose by 60 points.
He was in contested threes. He set the record this year for contested threes being the game.
Stop ignoring these. Stop pulling your Adam Silver.
Memphis lost by 61 points.
Yeah, 140-79.
I'd love to hear the final 30 seconds of the call on the Memphis Radio Network. I bet you'd be priceless.
It was just a rough game for Memphis in a season that has not been what they wanted. Now, again, at the beginning of the year, they thought they had a playoff caliber team. When you have Mike Conley and Marc Gasol, you think you can be. And now Mike Conley hurt. Marc Gasol, he's still playing, just not very well. Although I think he was resting for that game, so he wasn't.
Oh, yeah, one of those, you know, calf strains.
Yeah.
Roped up on the wrong side of the bed.
And I think, what you call it, the other guy, Tyreke Evans, he got a recent DNP rest. I love how Memphis is resting players. As if one thing about the Sixers, they didn't really do this in terms of, like, having a Marc Gasol to rest. They didn't have a Marc Gasol. Like, they would have traded Marc Gasol for future assets. And
then their future Marc Gasols were sitting out with their Philadelphia redshirt year.
Correct. That's how it goes.
And then just one quick reminder before we finish the sports update. Second half of Sweet 16 will air tonight right here on Sports Radio Ticket. Action starts just after 5 o'clock. That'll be over on 1350 KTIK with Kansas and Clemson the first game tonight. Games will then be joined in progress on 93.1 FM after Caves and Prater end at 6 p.m. tonight.
Coming up next, we'll have another edition of Quick Picks. And I wonder with this NCAA tournament if it would be easier to pick losers instead of winners, because it's been a rough tournament for a lot of people. I had a friend of mine say that the bracket that's winning is somebody's kid that basically just picked mascot names. So that's one of those years. Back to pick tonight's games. When we return, we'll tell you who's going to win and why next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
It's time to consult the Magic 8-Ball, open up a fortune cookie, or maybe even flip a coin.
I said him! Into the future.
However they do it, it's time for some Quick Picks and Predictions with Bob and Chris.
And Quick Picks and Predictions is brought to you by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist. High-quality bowling balls, bags, and accessories located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. Well, unpredictable as this tournament was, Chris was very predictable at picking losers yesterday. He went 0-4. Bob went 2-2. They both missed Kentucky and Nevada, and they got the other games right with Bob getting Michigan and Florida State. So we'll go to tonight's games, which can be heard right here on Sports Radio Ticket, starting at 5 o'clock on 1350, moving over to 93.1 FM after Caves and Prater. Start with you, Bob, since you're defending the title. Who you got tonight, Villanova or West Virginia?
Game, really high-caliber game. West Virginia's defense, very tough. They press. But I think Villanova has the best overall team play that's left. And I think Jay Wright finds a way to get it done, and Villanova will advance to the Elite Eight tonight in Boston.
All right, Chris, we're picking winners. Just remember, winners.
I see that little sarcasm.
You were 0-4, and you're losing in Quick Picks 5-1 this year.
Remember what happened last year?
It wasn't this bad.
Last year, I was out here picking the winners the way it's supposed to be. That was a rough day yesterday. Villanova gets the win today. And of all the games, like individual matchups, you know, Carter's one of those, like, I'll press you. They've mentioned that story throughout, I think, most of West Virginia games this year, where, like, Huggins saw Carter at an AAU event, wasn't even there to see Carter, but Carter was pressing the entire game almost, like, without even encouragement from the coaches. And Huggins was like, I need that guy. I need him at West Virginia. Well, he's going to probably be locked on Jalen Brunson throughout the game, who could be the player of the year in college basketball. Now on the other side, Mikal Bridges, who's a great defender. I don't know if they're going to stick him on Carter or not, but they can if they want to go to that one. So this is as far as individual battles. I'm looking forward to a lot of little things, but Villanova wins.
In that same region, Texas Tech, Purdue, the other game tonight. Who you got, Chris?
This one. One of those toss-ups. I'm going Purdue, though. I think Purdue gets the victory, and Haas being able to play or not being able to play, I actually think that's more of a negative. Like, I would think it'd be a lot easier for them to know going in, okay, what their deal is. But Purdue, throughout college basketball, they've been in the top five for a good chunk of the season. They were in the discussion for a one seed throughout a good chunk of the season. And I think in terms of ceiling, they're better, so they'll win. But this is one of those where I've been wrong on a game like this throughout the entire tournament.
This is one that I've been wrong at as well, and I went just the opposite. We saw what some of the teams did when they were missing guys. I don't think even if Haas is able to play, he's going to be very effective. So I don't know. I threw the caution to the wind and went with Texas Tech, but this is one of the four that I feel the least confident in tonight.
For the game that starts all the action tonight over on 1350, who you got, Bob? Kansas or Clemson?
Well, Chris tries to scare me saying Bill Self can't win these kind of games, but I like Kansas. I think Clemson is going to be tonight's Texas A&M, coming off a tremendous beatdown of Auburn. I think Kansas is going to be solid. They're going to make the plays they need to make. I look for Kansas to get by Clemson because I think they're just a little more solid, a little more consistent team, the one versus the five, which is probably the wrong reason to pick anybody in this tournament.
Yeah, like this is just one of those. You did Kansas. They're one seed. But I don't trust one seeds in this tournament. They haven't been reliable. Heavy favorites? Nah. Let's go with Clemson. Bill Self's track record in these situations. And again, it's not that he can't win. It's just that he hasn't always won in these type of scenarios. And it's kind of more fun to be on the other side. Not be stressed out looking at Bill Self. And instead kind of enjoy him struggling a little bit in this situation. And really the main reason is I just want to be able to watch the what's going on in Omaha, the Midwest region, and just say, let's go orange the entire time. So let's go orange. That's more relevant for me for the next one, but Clemson does wear orange, so let's go orange.
And then the final game we'll pick. Well, we'll just start with Bob. We already know you're going Duke, right, Chris?
Nah.
Didn't you have Duke in your real bracket, though?
No.
I thought you said you had Syracuse like losing like the
I had them losing in the Sweet 16, but it was to Oklahoma.
Oh, okay. All right, Chris. Well, Syracuse, Duke, tell us why your orange are going to win.
It's a conference game. This is not some situation where Syracuse is going to walk into the door, oh, my God, Duke. And Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter and Grayson Allen. We're not supposed to be here. Nah, I've seen Duke before. Kind of, and they only faced him once in conference play. It wasn't one of the league's opponents they saw twice. But even seeing them once, there was a bunch of common opponents along the ride. They know they can compete in this game. And Syracuse's first half against Duke last time they faced at Cameron Indoor, ugly as can be. I think the teams like didn't hit a three-pointer, like 0 for 23, something like that, in the first half. Similar type of game, except Syracuse plays with a two-point lead or a four-point lead, and then just ekes out like a 46 to 44 game. And yes, Duke somehow will be held to under 50 points, even though Duke, I think, averages like 80.
I think this is going to be an ugly game. Both teams play zone. I think it's going to kind of bog things down. But I think in the end, Duke has more talent than Syracuse, and they will find a way to get it done. Coach K over Coach Boeheim.
Michigan State had more talent than Syracuse.
Oh, they did. That was my national champ pick. JP in studio. He is getting ready to pick up and physically move Fish out of the way so he can take over. Now you're kind of doing a good job of boxing out to get to the microphone. What do you guys have on the show
today? It always gets a little crowded in here about 3 o'clock, and occasionally I'll yell, too many people, which means get out. But, Bob, before we get to what we have coming up, earlier today you were talking about Texas A&M,
mm-hmm.
and you said they played the part of the boot in one game and
yep.
the rear end in the other,
yep.
which is a great analogy. Was that a coach? Did you learn that from a coach? Where did you get that?
A friend of mine used to have that as a discussion when you were talking about a route, somebody playing the part of the boot and somebody playing the part. He used a different word than rear end. So.
I like that. We took that's a new drop around here.
Great.
A new drop.
Yes. Great.
And
my friend Ed will love the fact that made it as a drop.
So. But coming up here in just a couple of minutes, yesterday we had a great time talking with Lexus Williams. Mm-hmm. He did a great job of previewing some of the Sweet 16 games. He's going to come back on and kind of recap what he saw. He's our new college basketball expert. And
wow.
If you heard him yesterday, he knew mm-hmm. some of the guys on the Loyola Chicago team, played with them in AAU ball. And so he's going to kind of talk with us about last night's games and why Nevada couldn't hold on and why Loyola Chicago is advancing.
So my question is, if he's a future GM, is him talking about a college athlete tampering?
He's not a GM yet.
He said he's a future GM. He's going to be one down the line. So I don't know. It seems like a little bit of a gray area to me. If he's a GM and he's talking about college athletes by
name. We've gone through the clearinghouse on this. We're okay.
Okay. Just making sure. This is, you might have gone through the NCAA clearinghouse. As you go through the NBA, that's the one you got to be worried about. The NBA will find you. Just ask Magic Johnson what happens when he's out here talking about these prospects.
Magic does what he wants, and he deals with the consequences after. We've known that for years.
Where are the Bulls in the standings right now?
They're near the bottom.
He's a Chicago guy. Yeah. Why don't we start a campaign that Lexus Williams should be the new GM of the Bulls? They can't do worse, can they?
Nah, I mean,
they're not making the playoffs.
Their intention this year was to not necessarily be the best, and they're not the best.
All right, Lexus Williams for GM of the Bulls. That's the move we're going to try to make happen. He's coming up with Caves and Prater. That's next. We'll be back on Monday to dissect what happened this weekend in the NCAA tournament. For Chris, I'm Bob. Thanks to Fish Cross the Glass. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.